Hey, you guys. Movie retrospective. Talking about Jack the Ripper. This is 2001's From Hell.
Pretty good movie.
It's not bad, actually. I will say, I actually really do like the look of this movie and just the whole aesthetic of this movie.
Yeah.
Now, it is based, well, it's very loosely based on the Alan Moore, Eddie Campbell graphic novel, also called From Hell. And it took a lot of liberties. I mean, Alan Moore is like famously doesn't like adaptations of any of his stuff. You know, and I feel like a lot of them have been kind of unsuccessful. You know, Watchmen, V for Vendetta, you know, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and stuff like that. So I can see why he'd be kind of cranky about it. And I can understand why he was cranky about this one in particular, because this one does take a lot of liberties with it. So I will say that if you are going to watch the movie From Hell, it's probably, honestly, I think you probably like it better if you hadn't read the graphic novel and if you didn't know all that much about the Jack the Ripper case. Because this is not historically accurate by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it's just a mishmash of a bunch of ideas, conspiracy theories, and it's a serial killer movie. It's fictional. It's fiction.
Yeah.
It's fiction.
And I mean, like I said, it has a great atmosphere. There's a lot of gore. It's just, I mean, it's really a beautiful looking movie. But like I said, it's not historically accurate. It's actually, Alan Moore got the idea for From Hell from another book. I think it was by a dude named Stephen Knight. And I think it was called Jack the Ripper, The Final Solution. So he was the one that came up with this whole Sir William Gull, who was in real life the physician to Queen Victoria and their contingent, being Jack the Ripper, and then like all the Freemasons and shit like that, like covering up for them, like because there was a scandal and there was like a baby that was in that would have really been in succession and blah blah blah. Even though there's really no real life evidence to support that. But a lot of the people that are in this movie and a lot of the people that he used in the story, like Alan Moore in the original story, are real people. He just changed them a lot to kind of fit into the conspiracy.
This is fiction.
Yeah.
It's just in a historical-looking setting. Matter of fact, the setting is good. It looks really good. Depp's English accent isn't always on point.
Yay.
Yeah. But
it's not that bad.
This is one of Depp's better movies, if you ask me. I mean, he's kind of hit or miss. Sometimes he'll come out with something really good. Sometimes it's not that good. He's always just Depped the fuck out, though. He's Deppifying. You know what I mean? The Deppification of a fucking movie. You know what I mean? He's always that dude. He's always Johnny
Depp.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing.
He never fools me into thinking that he's
something. He's someone else.
No, it's Johnny Depp doing this thing.
Because I think Johnny Depp as a person is just kind of so much larger than life. So I feel like when he's one of those dudes, he's like Tom Cruise. It's like every time you see him in a movie, it's Tom Cruise. He never disappears into a role. And I don't think Johnny Depp does either. Now, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. It's depending on what kind of role you're playing.
I gotta say, though, for me, Tom Cruise's best acting was probably an Interview with the Vampire. Sorry. A lot of people don't like him in that movie. But
I think he's good when he's playing a villain.
A villain. He's a very good villain, and he's fucking kind of a dick.
Like, he was a dick in Magnolia, so he was really good in that, too.
And
because I think that plays to his strengths.
He did kind of. There's a big difference between Anne Rice's fucking Lestat and Tom Cruise's Lestat.
Yeah.
But that did convince me that he wasn't Tom Cruise at that moment.
That's the closest he ever came.
You're right. I like that character. I liked how he did that character. Depp's kind of like that. You can tell that that's Depp, and he's always going to be Depp. It's Depp on a show for you.
He's always going to be Deppin'.
Yeah, he's Deppin' the fuck
Johnny
out.
Johnny Depp be Deppin'.
Yeah. But you know what? I understand it. That was I was there during those days. The appeal of going to see a movie that had Johnny Depp in it was that he was going to Depp the fuck out in it.
Which is completely different than caging the fuck out.
It's like caging the fuck out.
Like Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, you know, or, you know, fucking. But he does. I'm just telling you, that's what it is. His fans wanted that, and he was a big box office draw for a long time. You know?
Yeah.
Thing is that when he live streams, he's fucking like that too, you know, in a way. Or he tries to be a more thoughtful version of that. It's an act, though. He's an act.
I feel like the thing about it is that I feel like his character in this, because he plays Frederick Aberline, who was a real person, who didn't look anything like Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And he was actually one of the lead investigators on the real Jack the Ripper case back in 1888. So he plays that character, and I really get the feeling that, one, the character in the movie, not so much the character in the graphic novel, because he's not really the central character of the graphic novel. Jack the Ripper is, to a greater extent. But in the movie, I think that they tried to make him sort of like Sherlock Holmes, because he has the whole absinthe and laudanum and fucking opium addiction, which he didn't have in the book. So I think they wanted to do a Sherlock Holmesy kind of, hey, he's a drug addict type of thing.
Yeah.
And that kind of like helps with his, you know, deductive powers. Also, the character is very similar to his interpretation of Ichabod Crane from Sleepy Hollow, which had come out in, 1999, I want to say? So, like, just a year or two before this.
Where he also depped the fuck out in that
one. Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying.
They're always depped.
These are, like, very, very similar characters.
Real
He's
similar.
Very kind of droll.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's kind of like a combination of Ichabod Crane from Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow and Sherlock Holmes kind of vibe.
Johnny Depp's best movie, actually, was Sweeney Todd. I'm just saying, the musical. I really
like Sweeney Todd. We should review that one. Yeah. So we just watched it just on a whim just a couple months ago, just because we felt like it.
No, I saw it before.
I saw it in the theater.
Okay.
When it came out.
You know, I like musicals, and he did a good job.
Yeah.
In that one, and he didn't depth the fuck out in that one.
Not really.
He plays a pretty good villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's still kind of sympathetic, I guess.
Yeah, he was a villain though.
Yeah, he was.
But
a villain.
There was a reason for it.
Yeah.
But this movie, I think, is one of his better movies.
Yeah, I would actually agree with that.
That
yeah.
he still does his thing in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I will tell you right now, I don't like this quite as much as Sleepy Hollow. But I do really actually like this. And I like it more. Now, okay. So the thing about this, like I said, it's marginally about Jack the Ripper. It's marginally based on the Alan Moore, Eddie Campbell graphic novel. And it kind of has the same skeleton of that story in the sense that I think in Jack the Ripper circles, what do they call this? The Royal Conspiracy? Like I said, it comes from that book called The Final Solution.
Yeah, but it's also mixed in with Masonic theories.
Well, that was in there too. I mean, all of that shit was in
the
there.
The occult and stuff, you know.
And if anything...
It works. It works in the story.
If anything, the novel has way more of a Masonic and occult thing to it. In fact... Matter of fact, I think I read From Hell, but it was a long time ago. It came out in the 90s. Like, initially, it came out, like, one issue at a time. And then, I think in 1999, they put out, like, a 550-page thing of it all together. I think, if I remember correctly, at the end of the novel, Jack the Ripper is essentially, which kind of reminds me of that Star Trek episode, where they're talking about Jack the Ripper being kind of almost like a demon that like can travel through the ages. So he becomes like later on, like he becomes Ian Brady from like, you know, the Moore's murders. And he becomes like, he manifests as different murderers like throughout history. So it's almost kind of like, so that whole quote, which is at the beginning of the movie about how, like, Jack the Ripper saying, oh, I gave birth to the 20th century. Obviously, Jack the Ripper never said that. One, because they never found the dude. And two, because of the three letters that they think were actually written by the killer, he doesn't say that in any of those. So that was that was from the novel. You know what I mean? So it's weird, though, because in the novel, like I said, it seemed like there was a much more of an occult thing to it. And the movie has that, too, but it downplays it slightly. So I feel like some of the stuff that they left in the movie that had kind of an occult flavor to it, they probably should have ramped that up a little bit, like more to go with the novel. Because sometimes I think some of the stuff that's in the movie, since they're not hitting the occult angle all that hard, maybe it seems like if you don't know anything about the novel, then you might think it was kind of pointless or why is this in here?
Well, if you don't know anything about the real case of Jack the Ripper, you might think this is historical. And I think a lot of people did think that this was
maybe
like
they
a
did
plot.
But yeah, this is really
back
not.
In those days, you know,
it's really
mean?
Not
back in those days, you know, it was kind of on the verge of internet, you know the internet was around, but not everybody was on it. There wasn't much to research on it, you know, it was very incomplete. So but this is kind of like something that you'd find off of like internet legends about crimes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And some of those remember those fake cases that people would make about crimes. And it sounded really complicated. You really thought that it happened, like burying the girl alive. And
yeah.
What did they call that? It's almost kind of like a LARPing type thing.
Well, it's an ARG.
An ARG.
It's an alternate reality game.
Right, right.
You're trying to make it seem as realistic as possible.
Yeah, back in these days, there was a lot of ARG type stuff, and fact and fiction was kind of blurry when you were young in those days.
Yeah.
You know, in this era. Because it was hard to fucking confirm what was true. You know, the internet didn't have a lot of information on it. You just had to go with what. So, when you watched this movie, I remember thinking that it was a lot more historical than it really was when I first saw it. When I first saw it, I was like, yeah, this is a strong theory about what really happened. It's not, though. It's not. It's from fiction.
Yeah, and like I said, it came from a book, and yeah, you know, that doesn't really have a lot of evidence to support it. Although, I will note that Sir William Gall, who, spoiler alert, ends up the surgeon, he does end up being Jack the Ripper in the movie and in the novel as well. He's played by Ian Holm in the movie, who was also Bilbo Baggins in Lord of the Rings. So, you know, a hobbit is Jack the Ripper. Who knew? So he actually was a suspect. It's not like he's just pulling this out of his butt. It's, you know, but they're kind of putting together this massive conspiracy where there isn't any. And I think kind of the point of the novel, I don't know if Alan Moore really did think that the Jack the Ripper murders were like this big Masonic conspiracy, like to cover up to cover up a royal scandal or whatever. Yeah. But I think he just wanted to, you know, I don't know a huge amount about Alan Moore, so I don't know. He might believe it for all I know. But, you know, I think he just thought it made an interesting story. And also kind of the point of the story, too, was how it was just kind of a thing where, like, the powerful can, you know, fuck over the underclass, like, just to get what they want. And they can kind of, like, you know, have all these elaborate stories about it and shit like that, which was a theme through a lot of his work, like V for Vendetta and stuff like that, too. So it's not that unusual to see why he would have come up with this story about it.
The thing is, though, is that they had so much power, they didn't have to go through these big convoluted
because this would be pretty convoluted if it was true.
Yeah,
makes a good movie, though. It makes a good story.
But if you made enemies with that class, they just killed you. They had somebody kill you. Your body was just never found. You disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like back then, especially in 1888 Whitechapel, people disappear all the time. Well, see, so that was one of the things about the story. If you haven't seen From Hell, like I said, we'll kind of like go a little bit about it, and we'll talk about where it deviates from reality, too. So pretty much, it's 1888, obviously, it's in Whitechapel, even though I believe some of the exteriors for this were actually shot in London, but I think most of it was shot in Prague, actually, that they set dressed to look like Victorian London. So you got your prostitutes, okay? There's five of them. This is historically accurate. All the prostitutes in there are, that's their names. That's the names of the women that were killed.
They didn't look like that, though.
No. And particularly Heather Graham. And I think a lot of people criticized it for this because Heather Graham, look, I love her. She was fucking Roller Girl in Boogie Nights. She's been she's a great actress. But her, honestly, her British accent, her Cockney accent was... It wasn't like Keanu Reeves and Francis Coppola's Dracula bad.
Yeah.
But it was a little bit, it was bothersome. Okay. Also, none of the prostitutes look like that. Now, Mary Kelly in real life did actually have a reputation of being young and quite pretty for the time. But what we're talking about is 1888 lower class Britain, and she's a prostitute. So, beauty standards are going to be a little mitigated. That's all I'm saying. She didn't look like Heather Graham, okay?
You look.
She had all her teeth. She was clean. Yeah. She had beautiful, clean hair.
Right. You look at the actual photographs of those women, men, and they were hags.
They were rough
and
looking.
You can tell that they were...
They had rough
drinking
lives.
Drinking like... That they drank like fishes.
Which they kind of do in this movie, too, but they still look okay.
Yeah, they look like derelicts.
I have to say,
I think they were.
Well, yeah, that I mean, they were
homeless derelicts. Yeah,
I mean, all you were doing, these poor women
walk around drinking and
were just drink. Yeah, they're walking around.
Dudes.
Yeah, getting money for blowing dudes or having sex with dudes in alleys, and then they were just trying to scrape up enough for a room for the night and some booze.
They were washing up. One thing that was accurate though is that they were washing up in the horse troughs.
Yeah.
And splashing it underneath between their legs and stuff.
And they did have actually one scene in this that I thought was kind of a nice touch, because this was something that they did back in the day. They had, like, for homeless people, they had what they called in the UK, they called it a doss house. And basically you would go in there to sleep, and there were a couple, there might have been like some cots or something like that, but that was kind of like the ritzy shit. So the real cheap shit is they would, you would all sit up on like a, essentially like a bench or like a church pew. And then they would put a rope across you so you didn't fall out, like when you slept. So you basically just like laid it. And yeah. I've seen like photographs of it from the time.
Yeah.
You paid like a penny or however much it was. That was like the cheapest sleeping accommodation. They would just put every, like a big row of people on a bench and put a rope there so they didn't fall out under their faces while they were sleeping. So that's what we're talking about. So I do like that they had a scene of that where all the women were sleeping there with them. Then they pulled the rope out like, hey, time to go, girls. You know what I mean? Like, get out of here. So that actually was period accurate. So you have all the prostitutes and they're all friends. Now, they all have, you know, even though, like I said, oh, I will point out, too, that a couple of the women that were playing the prostitutes, I can't remember that. Oh, my God. I can't remember their names. But the one I think that played Annie Chapman and the one that played Catherine Eddowes, those two actresses were in a shit ton of movies by Mike Leigh, who I'm like a big fan of, like a British director. And the woman that played Annie Chapman, sadly, I think this was her last movie because she died quite young of pneumonia. So she died like right after this movie came out. So I think it was kind of creepy because she gets murdered in this fucking movie. And then like a year later, she drops dead. Hmm. You know what I mean? So it was like, because I remember hearing about it because I was like a big fan of hers because she was in like a lot of Mike Leigh movies. And I was like, holy shit, she died. She was like, I don't even remember how old she was. Maybe 40s? Maybe. I don't even remember she was that old. But yeah, so the five of them know this woman named Anne Crook. Now, I don't know if Anne Crook was a prostitute too, or if she was, I think in the original conspiracy theory by Stephen Knight, I think she was like a shop girl. So she wasn't a hooker, but she was like low class, you know what I mean? So the premise of this is that Anne Crook has married this dude named Albert, and they have had a baby, and she's super happy, and he has a lot of money and shit like that. But then at some point, some of the prostitutes, she's like, hey, can you guys, like, prostitutes babysit my baby for a minute, because I gotta go do some shit, you know, like you do. And and so before that happens, though, these carriages show up, and Anne Crook and Albert both get kidnapped, essentially. They get, like, you know, separated, and they get taken away. Later on, you see Anne Crook in this room, and she's being interrogated, like, who else knows? Who else knows? And she's just, like, flipping out. And then they give her a lobotomy and put her in a mental institution. Now, you don't really know what the fuck is going on with this until later on, unless, like I said, you've read the book or you've read about the conspiracy theory. So there's that whole thing. Now, at this point, there is one prostitute who gets killed. Now, this is interesting, too, because the first woman that gets killed in this is not one of the canonical five Jack the Ripper murders. However, this woman was actually killed before the famous Jack the Ripper murder started, and some people have speculated that she was an early victim of Jack the Ripper. She didn't have the exact same mutilations, but she did have her throat cut, and I believe she was stabbed like a whole bunch of times. So some people have thought that maybe like it was ramping up as it goes, but that's not usually put in the canonical five, as they call it. But I can't remember what her name was, Martha something, like started with a T. But yeah, so she was the first one that gets killed. So at this point, Inspector Frederick Aberline? I don't know. Played by Johnny Depp, he comes on the scene. Now, here's one thing where this deviates from the novel. In this, because I feel like Alan Moore didn't like it that he played Aberline as what he called an absinthe-swilling dandy. Whereas in the book, he's more like kind of a gruff, like, in, you know, like a regular, like, inspector type dude. So he kind of didn't like that change. Also, Johnny Depp in this is essentially psychic. Which, now I'm not going to go too far because in the novel, there was a psychic in there. I don't remember if he was really psychic, though. Because I think on the real Jack the Ripper case, they did have a couple psychics come in, but they were obviously full of shit. But in this movie, Johnny Depp is an opium addict, and when he goes and smokes opium, he has visions about what's going to happen. You know what I mean? So he kind of, so that's how he gets insights about the case. That's why I think that they were going for a more Sherlock Holmesy kind of vibe with that, because that is not from the book. So that was something that was added. So he has these visions, which kind of cause him to figure out, even from very, very early on when the prostitutes start getting picked off one by one, that this is someone, he pretty much twigs immediately that this is an educated man, someone who was educated as a surgeon, somebody who's, you know, maybe somebody, because I think one of the first victims was, he figures out that, well, she wasn't killed here because there's not any arterial spray or there's anything like that on the wall, even though they found her like right in the middle of the fucking sidewalk. So he's like, well, she must have been brought here in a carriage, which implies someone with some money. And then he starts finding like all those little grape stems like underneath them. And at this time period, grapes were super, super expensive and a prostitute wouldn't have been able to afford them. And then he started smelling laudanum on their breath. So he just assumed, well, they lured them in with, into the carriage with some grapes and then gave them a drink laced with laudanum, which made them all loopy. And then like he went about all of the shit that he did.
Yeah, and the cops are convinced that it couldn't be a Britishman that was doing this.
An Englishman, yeah.
An Englishman, yeah.
Yeah, the commissioner,
they
he goes...
it was foreigners or
who has
Jews.
Some fantastic fucking facial hair, I have to say. It's just like, psh, it's so good. Now, the thing about this, though, is that the commissioner in this, that was also a real dude, but I don't know. I feel like maybe, you know, since this is a real person, they do kind of portray him as like, oh, an English person that could have done this. Must have been some Jew or some, and it wasn't anybody that was educated. It must have been some butcher or something like that. So go, or go look for some quote unquote red Indians or whatever the fuck.
Although, you know, I think that I seem to recall that maybe there was something like that kind of historically at first, that the cops didn't think that it was done by an Englishman.
I do.
It must be a foreigner.
I think there was kind of like some shit swirling around, and
that quickly vanished. Because they said in order to walk around freely in that area with and not stick out, you'd have to be English because they all were.
Yeah,
it had to been somebody that people would have trusted or knew.
Now it was, as far as I know, it was actually historically accurate where they were saying about how when the murders first started happening. The Jews in the area were targeted by mobs, and like people were like, it must be the Jews, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So,
but I don't think the cops thought that.
Yeah, I don't know if they did either. Yeah. There might have been a little bit of that, but I'm not really sure. Because the thing about the Jack the Ripper case, it's so fucking complicated. I think we did a show about it a while back, but we only talked about a couple of the different, suspects, and there were like hundreds. So it's like a whole fucking thing. So I just feel like they didn't. Because they didn't have the investigative techniques back then, because they didn't, really know what they were looking for, they hadn't really seen anything to this extent before. I mean, obviously, Whitechapel in 1888 was very violent. People got fucking beat up and murdered all the time. But something that was this meticulous and this savage, I don't really think that they had seen anything like that before, and they didn't really have any concept of why someone would do that.
They didn't know what a serial killer was back then either. None of that was codified yet.
Right.
And almost always, to be a successful serial killer in a situation like this, of course, you have to fit in. So they're almost always known. Or they're kind of just, they blend right in with that scene. So whoever it was somebody who was in Whitechapel a lot and didn't attract any attention.
I kind of suspect that much as well. The more I read about it, I'm kind of thinking that Chapman dude was maybe, I don't know, I lean a little bit more toward that. Because he did actually kill people later when he came back to, I think he went back to the U.S. And then he killed a bunch of his wives. Now, he poisoned them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he wasn't doing the shit over there. Lately, I've seen a lot of shit people saying like H.H. Holmes was...
No.
Well, I mean, he was there at the time, like he was in the UK at the time, but I don't know. It just seems H.H. Holmes was more a profit-motivated killer. I mean, he did kind of get off on the shit, but he used people's bodies to sell them.
He was very much kind of like Gaston Leroux's Phantom of the Opera. He was doing the same kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Secret bases and building, you know, torture chambers and... You know, his murder castle.
Yeah.
And stealing money, and he was a serial killer.
Big time.
He was into it. But another thing is that those women of Whitechapel would have been beneath his tastes. He liked pretty.
Yeah.
Professional type women. And really, if you look at serial killer cases across the ages, they have a certain type and they stick with it.
Yeah.
And it was a different man. It was a
this
different
one,
guy.
I kind of feel like, I feel like even at the time when this was going on, and they kind of go into this a little bit in the movie too, is that I kind of feel like whoever did this was punishing the women, either because he didn't like prostitutes or he just didn't like women in general because, you know, one had fucked him over or something like that. I just kind of feel like it was that
something like that
motivation, because why otherwise, why the savagery, why this kind of ritualistic? And the thing about this movie is that because the murders are so iconic and because they were so horrific, I mean, he would like take people's organs, obviously, like the last murder, you know, which I think was Mary Kelly, right? Like that was the only one that didn't happen in the street. That happened in her room that she was staying in. They actually, as gory as it is in the movie, they toned it down. Because he actually did. He put the heart on the fucking fire. He took her intestines out and like strung them around the fucking room like bunting, man.
It's
like
they didn't even photograph the crime scene.
There is, yeah. It's black and white, thankfully.
Yeah. And didn't he remove her face? There was just like a skull or something.
He might have done something like, well, some of them, I think most of the women were pretty, their faces were pretty well mutilated.
Yeah.
Especially like as it went on, because it just got worse and worse like as it went on.
He had time to do it in that room. He was somebody who blended in, who fit in. They kind of knew him. I have a feeling that the girls that he killed had seen him before. I don't think he killed you every time he dealt with you.
He would come back later and get you.
He could come back later and get you. So I think they kind of trusted him because maybe they had done business with him before.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
But, so in the movie, they kind of explain not only the savagery and ritualistic nature of the murders, but also why these particular women were targeted. So the conspiracy goes, now I will say, I think they went a little bit, it's a little too early, like when, because I think at this point in the movie, like only two or three murders had taken place. And then Johnny Depp, I know he's Inspector Abilene, but I'm just going to call him Johnny Depp because
he's playing
Depp.
Himself.
He's just Johnny Depp. Come on.
Yeah, he's playing.
So, you know, he's pretty much, oh, hey, these murders like form a five-pointed star. But I was like, but they didn't have five murders at the time. And I just kind of feel like, it's kind of hard to make a five-pointed star
out of five things.
Out of five things,
right.
Because they're just kind of like random dots.
It look like a circle.
I see that in a lot of horror movies, though. Yeah. They're like, you know, especially or serial killer type movies and thrillers and stuff. They're always just kind of like, look, it makes a pattern. I'm like, no, those are just a couple of dots. You can make all kind of patterns with that. Just draw a line that way, draw a line that way. It's just, you know, it's unless it's, you know, like connect the dots, okay. Right. But it's like, you know what I mean? Other than that,
you got
no.
three dots in a line, you know that's a line.
So yeah.
To do the five-pointed star, you probably need 12 points to do that.
Yeah, I would think you would at least need so it was, you know, definitive that that's what the pattern
gotta
was.
Have the Pentagon in the second.
Instead of just like a random.
Yeah, right.
That's all I'm saying. But yeah, so he figures out that he's like, well, I think this is ritualistic. I think this is an educated person. So, and we need to, you know, see what's going on. So what ends up happening is that he goes to this one surgeon who, not coincidentally, because it's all like a conspiracy, but he was the one that gave Ann Crook the lobotomy and threw her in the fucking mental asylum. So she's like all wigged out and they can't get any information out of her really. So then, he goes to that surgeon, was like, hey, can you help me out with the case? And the dude's like all fucking snotty about it. And he's just like, man, fuck up. Blah, blah, blah. So Johnny Depp ends up going to Sir William Gull, who, again, I said, spoiler alert, ends up being Jack the Ripper. Although at this point, Johnny Depp doesn't know that yet. He's like, hey, man, I need a surgeon to help me out with this case because I think the killer might also be a surgeon, but I'm not making the connection that it might be you. So Sir William Gull, like I said, was the physician to Queen Victoria and her family, which, as I said, he was in real life. So basically, he's very, very helpful at the beginning. And he's like, oh, yes, it's this kind of knife. And the killer was probably right-handed, even though at the time, I'm pretty sure they thought he was left-handed. But I could be remembering that wrong, so I don't know. Please correct me. So, you know, like I said, he's very, very helpful at the beginning. And he seems to, you know, kind of go with Johnny Depp's theories. Yeah, that's cool and everything like that. Now, as it goes on, Johnny Depp figures out through his burgeoning romance with Mary Kelly. And like I said, I think that's why they made Mary Kelly in the movie, played by Heather Graham, and made her look like all clean and have her teeth and everything like that, because they wanted to set up a love interest between Johnny Depp and Heather Graham in the movie, even though that wasn't in the book. And obviously in real life, they didn't know each other because Mary Kelly was murdered. And that's how Aberline like found out about her. He's like, here she is, she's all cut up. But so they kind of, he starts talking to her, and she's like, yeah, man, we knew this chick named Ann Crook, and she was married to this dude named Albert, and he was, like, really wealthy, and they got married, and we were all at the wedding, and they had a baby, and it was, like, awesome, and then they both got kidnapped, and we don't know what the fuck happened to them. So as, so Johnny Depp is investigating, and he finds out, he takes her to, I think it's the National Gallery, I've been there, but I can't remember what it looked like, and he shows her, you know, here's the portrait of Queen Victoria, looking like Queen Victoria, and then he's like, here's this other portrait. Does that dude look familiar? And she says, oh my God, that's Albert. Guess what? It's Prince Edward Victor. Now, who was also a real person. So basically what they figure out is that because the prince, who, by the way, also has syphilis, and can't be, because at first they thought, well, oh, maybe the prince is Jack the Ripper. But the doctor was like, no, he has syphilis and he has like the shakes and shit. So he wouldn't be able to like do the mutilations like the way that they got done. So he ended up marrying Anne Crook, a commoner, and also a Catholic, which was a big no-no. And they got married in a Catholic church and they had a baby, and that baby would thereby be in succession to the throne. And of course, the royal family couldn't have that, so they call up Sir William Gull, their handy-dandy surgeon, who is also a mason, and says to him, hey, can you kind of, like, take out these chicks that were all at this fucking wedding, which is all the prostitutes that got killed. However, Sir William Gull got a little too into it, so they let him do it, but then, like, at the end, they're like, bruh, I shouldn't have done that. And then, like, the Masons, like, all punish him and stuff. But that's what Johnny Depp figures out by studying all the Masonic lore and stuff. It's like, oh, well, you killed these women, like, ritualistically by slitting their throat and, like, doing all the fucking, like, all the five-pointed star shit. So it was, like, an occult kind of, you know, a ritualistic type of thing, which is why they were done. But they do imply that the queen and shit like that was not super happy about it, although she didn't stop it. Because she just said, we just wanted them taken out, like, killed. We didn't want them, like, fucking mutilated and for you to make a whole thing about it. Yeah. And, like, draw attention right. to it. So.
And that's what really would have happened.
Right. So
that's
he did.
That's why the writers are giving themselves a cover.
Yeah.
Because what really would have happened is they would have arrested him on charges and then sentenced him to death for a charge he didn't commit. That's the easiest way.
Yeah.
But,
you know, but in that, this one, they get poetic justice because, this, well, they take Sir William Gull.
Yeah.
After they let, like I said, they let him finish and, like, kill all the prostitutes, even though I'll get into a little bit why they let, like, Mary Kelly live, even though she didn't in real life. But, so they let him finish his five rituals. They're like, okay, fine, you shouldn't have done that, but whatever. But he goes to, like, the Masonic thing, and they're like, bro, we don't like that. You know, you're punished or whatever, and he gives him like this snotty speech about like, bitch, I'm like a god now and I'm like way over your shit, which is kind of like a nod to the novel, because in the novel, like I said, he became like a transcendent being kind of, and he like went through time and shit like at the end. So that's kind of like a little sop to that. And so they're like, okay, well, we don't care how fucking elevated you are, we're gonna give you a lobotomy just like they gave to that woman at the beginning. Right. So it was like Perret, and then they throw him in the thing and he's just like sitting there drooling or whatever. And then it turns out, as I said, if you haven't seen this, it's a spoiler alert, but I'm going to spoil it anyway. Well, like I said, movie. It's 2001. It was okay. A long time ago. Come on, this was 20 years ago if you haven't seen it. Jesus Christ. You know what I mean? And like I said, it's based on the book. A lot of people have read the book. A lot of people have read the graphic novel. A lot of people have seen the movie, so I'm just like not worried about it. So basically what ends up happening, so the last murder, who in real life was Mary Kelly, she was the one that was all fucked up with the intestines everywhere and the heart on the fire and whatnot. She's so fucked up that, you know, Johnny Depp goes in there and he's like, oh man, my fucking girlfriend's dead. Look at this. This is horrifying. But then he, like, pulls up the hair and the hair is brown. Now, her hair in the movie is red, so he's like, oh, it's not her. But he doesn't tell the cops that, because then he knows that the Masons will be after her ass if they know that she's still alive, because they think she's dead. So, basically, he's like, oh, yeah, bummer. And then he gives her a bunch of money so she can get the fuck out of Dodge. She takes the baby that was Ann Crook and Albert's baby that got kind of shunted off to people. But she went and adopted the baby with all the money. And she took the fuck off and went back to Ireland. And he wanted to go to her and she kept asking him to. She kept writing letters just like, you know, here we are. Come see us and, you know, come live with us out on the farm, like on the cliff. And it'll be awesome. We'll be happy ever after. But Johnny Depp is basically like, well, I can't go out there because if anybody's watching me, because the Masons are still watching me, they'll know she's still alive and they'll kill her. So I can't. So he basically, because he loves her so much, he lets her go because he does not want her to get killed. And then He dies at the end. And it's implied that he kills himself because he dies in the opium den. But then when Robbie Coltrane comes in there, who's like the cop that's been working with him, and I love Robbie Coltrane, you guys. So he comes in there and he sees that Johnny Depp has the two shillings or whatever the fuck those the coins are, like, in his hand. And he had made the mention earlier, like, and he had done it to one of the victims earlier. We put them on the eyes, like, for the ferryman or whatever. So he had them in his hand, almost like he was like, whoever finds me, like, put these on my eyeballs. So he overdosed deliberately. So I guess he was, one, he lost his girlfriend and he was bummed about that. And two, he thought it'd be better if he was dead, so there was no way for anyone to trace her through him. So I guess that's why he did. I don't think that happened in the book. And in real life, Frank Abberline lived till he was like 85 years old. So, so that's like, again, not accurate at all. But I mean, for like a cool, interestingly, this is directed by the Hughes brothers, who usually, they're from Detroit, and they usually did like real Detroit-based shit. Like they did, they made like Dead Presidents. I think they made Menace to Society, stuff like that. So it's like a little bit out of their wheelhouse. But I think they did a really good job, like, with the atmosphere of this. Like I said, if you don't concentrate too much on this, like, this is nothing like the Jack the Ripper case. And I understand if you don't like it because it's not, it's a very, very, very loose adaptation of the novel. But as a movie, I think it works pretty well. I mean, there's a few things in there that you're like, why the hell is that in there? That doesn't make any sense. But I think the atmosphere makes up for it. The acting is good, even though a couple of the accents are a little bit biggy. But, you know, just with the two Americans. But that always happens. We talked about that before with Dracula, how they probably should get Brits. And I should say, too, that Johnny Depp was actually not the first pick to be in this. I think they wanted, they were talking about Jude Law. And it's another British actor. I can't remember who it was at the time, but they couldn't do it for whatever reason. So he was like the third or fourth choice, like the for you know, they approached.
Adam Depp in it probably was a good choice because it got more box office action.
Yeah, and this made quite a bit of money. And the thing about it is that even though, as I said, people that were really into Alan Moore and really into the graphic novel were pissing and moaning about it because it was, you know, a not a very good adaptation, which I'll give it that. It's not really that much the same. But just as a movie, I think it's a really good movie. It's like a really entertaining, I don't know, it's like a really creepy, like atmospheric, gothic sort, because I love all that kind of like Victorian era, like, horror. I love all that shit.
I put it up there with Coppola's Dracula. It's about like that.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that. Yeah. And like Sleepy Hollow, kind of that type of thing. That's more like a colonial America type of thing, but this is like more a Victorian England type of thing.
I have to see that again. It's been so long.
But yeah, they all kind of came out in the same few years, so it all kind of like, they all have that sort of feel to them.
Yeah.
And that's a tone that I like really well. And I've said before, I'm not a huge fan of like a lot of the horror and stuff that came out of the 90s. Obviously, there are, you know, quite a few exceptions to that. But there was something about like the tone of a lot of 90s horror movies that I didn't like. But this is more along the lines of something that I liked from that era. I liked that they were going in this like kind of gothic steampunk kind of direction with a lot of stuff set in Victorian era, and I really, really like that. So I think it's like really cool. Like, I really liked all the reds. I really loved all the green lanterns. Like,
they tended to be pretty good from that era too.
They
did that tone.
Yeah,
it is. I think Interview with the Vampire was like the beginning of it.
Yeah,
that kind of
So that's a very similar. I think Interview with the Vampire came out in when 94.
Yeah.
So it was like a few years before this.
Started to kind of build up on the back of that.
Yeah. And so this is one that, this one that was like a little later in the game, I guess, because this didn't come out until 2001. But it still has that feel to it, and I really, really like that feel. I like a lot of the character work. I just like a lot of this.
I think what it was is that a lot of people that were kind of from the gothic fucking scene of that time started to approach the age to where they were going to work in these studios.
Yeah.
And they were starting to have some pull with the style of how things looked. And there was a lot in fucking, the goth scene was popular. You had celebrities going to the to goth clubs.
Yeah, it got mainstreamed a lot in the 90s.
So a lot of these movies were kind of built on the back of the fact that Hollywood people were hanging out in goth clubs.
Yeah.
I think that's what. And then people with goth backgrounds were starting to work. You know, Johnny Depp was one of them. him and fucking Tim Burton. Tim Burton, those are goths. Yeah. You know?
I was going to say, it was the whole ascension of Tim Burton and that whole mainstreaming of that aesthetic.
Right.
Which prior to that had been very underground.
You had bunches of new people, younger people coming in on the coattails of fucking Tim Burton.
Yeah.
So it kind of changed the Hollywood scene. It changed fashion, too. You started to see... It's funny, because like a few years later, in the 2000s, or in the late 90s, you start seeing regular people wearing clothes that back in 93, 92, man, those are goth clothes.
You'd have been beat up for wearing that.
Yeah, we would have worn that. But at least in some places. Mainstream people are dressing like that now. So we had to up our game. We were constantly upping our game.
It's funny because I remember the first time I saw a normal looking girl wearing black nail polish.
Yeah.
Which when I was in high school,
didn't do that.
If you wore black nail polish, that's all you had to have. You had black nail polish, everyone thought you were a Satanist.
I think, you know, it's weird to say this, but I think Buffy the Vampire Slayer had a lot to do with that.
That too.
You started seeing girls that weren't goth started to look like that.
Like darker lipstick and I'm doing the smoky eye and I'm doing black nail polish.
Yep.
This is my goth phase.
Yep.
Like a lot of them started doing that, which a lot of us were just kind of rolling our eyes, but you know.
Kind of like Sugar Snaps.
Ginger
Snaps. Ginger Snaps. I called it Sugar Snaps.
Ginger Snaps. Not a cereal.
You had a lot of girls that looked like those two girls out of fucking Ginger Snaps running around everywhere.
And that was 2000, I think. Yeah.
Right.
So right around this same time period.
But you started to see them around 96, though. 95, 96.
Yeah, yeah, I remember seeing
that. Those girls
that
look like you see out of Ginger Snaps. You saw them running around everywhere.
And you had The Craft, too, from 1996.
Yeah, that, too.
That was like a big thing from around
then. So it just started to become kind of mainstream fashion for a while.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this is definitely, like you said, this is one of the movies, I don't like it quite as much as Sleepy Hollow, but this is one of the movies that it's kind of has a similar tone, and it's one of Johnny Depp's better roles, even though it's essentially the same role as Sleepy Hollow, not quite as goofy, because I feel like he's kind of more like, look, I have all these gadgets and stuff, like in Sleepy Hollow, which he doesn't have in this one. He's a lot more serious, and he's like drugged out all the time. But the imagery in this is really cool. I like all the absinthe imagery and like all his fucking weird visions and shit like that. Like I said, just don't worry about it. It's totally not historically accurate. It's not that close to the book or the graphic novel. It's the same. This story is kind of similar, but it has like a different focus. So just don't worry about that and just enjoy the movie, because it's a good movie.
To me, it was like a Sherlock Holmes movie.
Yeah, and you could definitely tell that they were trying to go in a more Sherlock Holmes direction.
Because,
like I said, in the graphic novel, Aberline is not really the main character, and Jack the Ripper is. Like, Sir William Bell is the main character.
It was a gothic Sherlock Holmes movie. Kind of felt a little bit like Dracula.
Yeah.
To me.
So if you like that, then you'd probably like this as well. Yeah. And like I said, it seemed like it got decent reviews at the time. Roger Ebert really dug it. Like, a lot of, you know, people really dug it.
When it first came out, it was cutting edge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
Just don't get mad because it's not historically accurate.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. All right. We will see you on the next one. Oh, this movie is on Hulu, by the way, if you want to watch it. If you don't have, I thought we had the Blu-ray, but I looked through all our shit and I didn't see it. So I was like, well, it's on Hulu. We'll watch it on there. So if you want to watch it. All right. So that'll do it for this movie retrospective, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye.